People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to another edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And I have two guests unusually in the studio this evening, because you may know by now that the new show at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay is called Night at the Musicals and is presented by Johnny Wu and Le Gâteau Chocolat, a couple of drag artists who are performing for us in Cape Town, their first visit here. Both Johnny and Gâteau have had distinguished careers as drag artists, mostly in the UK and elsewhere in the world, and they've put the show together, and it sounds by all accounts to be an absolute blast because it's filled with favorites. But so welcome first of all to both of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Town, to Fine Music Radio, to this program People of Note. And it is the first visit, isn't it,
for it both of you? It is the first visit to South Africa, yes, and of course Cape Town as well.
When you get invitations like this, what do you think when someone says to come to South Africa? Peter Turin says come and do a show. Do you think South Africa?
Well, Johnny and I are still very much living in some kind of surreal bubble that this is happening, because as much as we love this show, we made this show, it's a very silly thing. It's a show that brings a lot of people a lot of joy, because I think there's something international about a musical theatre experience, you know, watching Sound of Music or Annie, all these things growing up. So the fact that we've been to New Zealand, Australia, London, and now we're in South Africa. So we arrived here on Sunday, and it's whatever day it is, I don't even know.
I said, well, when I first arrived, I was like, what day is it? How long have we been here? Because we have a day's flight, but it is, well, it's not a day, it's like half of the camp. It works out as a day, doesn't it? It's kind of like it's logical to come here, because we kind of like speak in the kind of the same language to the audiences. So, you know, it's like we haven't really done the show in Europe, because I think there are the language kind of barriers, because we kind of have, there's a lot of chat and patter and that kind of stuff. But yeah, we kind of keep thinking this little show that we kind of made up in this small cabaret bar called Bistro Tech years ago, when we were just kind of having fun, and it was like a nothing, and we did Night of the Musicals, another Night of the Musicals, oh no, not another Night of the Musicals. Just went on and on, and then we resurrected it when I opened my bar, The Glory, in London, and we just did it on this kind of like tiny stage. And
by that point, I'd been to Australia, and I just said to Johnny, look, there's Adelaide Fringe, and I think this show might work there. And we went, and it was...
And it worked.
It worked. It was so ridiculous. Yeah. And since then, we haven't stopped touring.
Would that have been your first sort of touring show when you went to Adelaide? Is that out of Europe?
Yeah. So, no, I'd been out to Australia several times and around the world. But with this show, this is the first time we took it out of our ghetto,
out of your comfort zone.
Out of our comfort zone, and go, should we put this in front of the world? And Adelaide lapped it up, you know? And 4 years later, even though we made this show in like 2004, 2006?
The first incarnations were in 2000, and I'm going to go back and say 2005.
I'm going to
maybe
agree
even
with
2004.
You.
Yeah, it was really early days of that cabaret space. So back to where we are, to be here in Cape Town, it's kind of extraordinary.
It's extraordinary.
And there's kind of half, it kind of also feels like, yeah, this is what we wanted to do. We wanted it to tour. So when you get an offer to tour, you're like, yeah, this is what we want. But then you're like, we're on, not just on the other side of the world, but we're in a completely different continent. We're in a different
culture.
So
you're very far south.
A long way
further south than Adelaide, I think.
Yeah. When the plane was pulling in, you know, you can watch the map. Mm. We are at the end of the world. A bit like Perth is, you know, you get to Johannesburg and then Cape Town, and it's the water. So it's the end. And so we're like, wow, this little show is taking us everywhere.
And have you worked on the African continent before, or is this a first on the
African continent?
I've worked. I did a wedding in Marrakesh.
Did you?
Yeah. So I did a big wedding for a friend of mine, and it was this big lavish production, and I was flown out to, she was a friend anyway, but I was flown out to sing.
Oh, I know who she is.
To dress as Marlena, my friend Sarah.
Sarah.
To dress as Marlena Dietrich and sing Falling in Love Again by this big pond with kind of like palm trees and that, and it was all very glamorous. And I've been to Gambia on holiday, and that's it. That's my
I grew up in Nigeria.
Yeah,
I grew up in Nigeria. So, but I haven't worked.
But we haven't worked. So this is
the first professional visit.
This is a great tick to put on our kind of list of continents of working. Very much so. Yeah, yeah.
It must be quite pleasant to have just the two of you. I mean, or do you have some great big management structure?
No.
Or do you pretty well choose where you're going to go and what you're going to do?
Yes. It's very much, it hinges on our friendship. It hinges on who we are.
Okay.
It hinges on our friendship, who we are, what our availabilities are, because Gatto has kind of like a very busy schedule. I run my bar, and then I kind of, I produce shows, and so I have kind of like points in my calendar where I need to be in London, and we both develop work. And so, you know, it depends when a theatre wants it, and we might say, well, it might be a great offer comes in, but we'll say, no, we can't do it. So,
well, this has been like 18 months in the making.
Oh,
we
really?
Have, yes.
The Cape Town,
because there was no free time in the diary for both of us. So this season at the theatre in Camps Bay, it's been a long time coming, just because it took that long to actually...
And here you are, and what a setting, you must admit.
It's beautiful.
Oh my God, it's incredible. I'm really obsessed. I have a few things I'm obsessed with. One of them is kind of fun fairs and roller coasters, as you know.
And the other,
and the other thing is the sea. And so I'm kind of, every time I go out, and the spray and the sun and the light, it's kind of like, it's like the whole of the kind of the bay's been kind of like being seen through this kind of filter or something. It's just stunning. Every time I look at it, I can't believe it. I feel drawn to it, although I'm not going in it.
I've told him he's not allowed.
It's too cold, and I would get...
And it's too choppy.
Sucked out.
Okay, now look, we've got two guests, as you know, so now we need some music. Now, you two can fight out who's going to choose the first piece.
You can go first before I trash things.
Okay. Okay, so I will start with Renee Fleming.
Of course.
But that's on the top of the list.
I know, but I told you you'd be the classy act.
Renee Fleming is an American soprano.
Yes, she's well known here.
She's
in fact, she's visited Cape Town.
Yes.
She's sung in this very theatre.
She's an extraordinary singer. And there is something transportive and ethereal. At the height of her powers, I found her heartbreakingly glorious. As someone who is into opera, I mean, there are other sopranos from Jesse Norman to Leontine Price to Montserrat, Joan Sutherland. I'm a huge fan of the soprano and the oeuvre and that repertoire. But Renee Fleming just has something really had something really special. I was lucky enough to see her three times, doing one at the De Rosa and Cavalier at the Opera House, then Capriccio at the Opera House in concert, and then a concert at the Barbican, and then something else at the Royal Festival Hall. And I'm glad I got to see her at the height of her powers, because that instrument is ridiculous. And for me, I think it's just more than the music. I feel like it is evidence of the beauty that is available to us and available to every single person, because she's not human. She hasn't got three eyes or four heads or 25 arms. It's something that she has dedicated her life to. Her craft has been a huge part of her life, so much that it ruined her marriage. And I think that that's something that's innate in us. And I love that I can connect to the humanity of, if I trained as hard, of course it's with talent as well, no, not just everyone can do it, but if you trained as hard, there is something of that magic that could be yours as well. And to think that that's available and I got to see her do it has been kind of really special.
What are you going to sing for us?
This is from the opera Louise, and it's a French aria called Depuis le Jour, and there are several recordings of it, but there's a recording that's celebrating, I believe it's James Levine at the Met. So the reason I refer you to that is because it's live, it's not in a recording studio. And she does the most extraordinary B-flat. She goes in, she hits it high, and then she does this diminuendo, and it's all in one breath. And all this technicality is happening, and she's still performing the music and the intent of the composer. And I'm like... I can't breathe. I'm going to cry. How did you cry?
Okay, let's hear the music quickly before you burst into tears.
Yes.
the really beautiful voice there of René Fleming, Depuis le Jour, and the first choice of one of my guests, Le Gâteau Chocolat, the other guest, Johnny Wu, both of whom are performing at Peter Tureen's Theatre on the Bay, a show called Night at the Musicals. While we're on the opera subject, Gâteau, you are a trained opera singer, aren't you? And opera plays a fairly big role in your life.
It does indeed. I'm not trained, however. I trained in law before I fell into opera singing. I just kind of kept singing through my degree, and I've been singing for a long time, and the voice lends itself to that sort of, to that genre, so I do operas as well. I'm lucky enough to do them around the world. In the last 3 years, I did the Threepenny Opera at the National in the UK. I did Black Rider with Victorian Opera in Melbourne. I've just come off doing Tannhäuser, Bayreuth, Wagner.
Were you in the Tannhäuser now with Valery Gergiev?
Yes.
Because I had four friends there, and I know all about Bayreuth because I've been there a few times, and I'm a huge Wagner fan. And I heard interesting things about this Tannhäuser. Because it was, for a person who goes very frequently around the world to see Wagner,
yes,
one of the best things he's seen at Bayreuth ever. But Gergiev,
I was in it.
But Gergiev has apparently been behaving a bit naughtily, and he hasn't been renewed. But apparently what he did while he was there, apparently the orchestra sounded great. So this is great to hear that you were in that very production about which I've been speaking for the last month.
Yes, it was a glorious thing. My role in it was quite difficult. I don't know that we've got the time to get into it, and I don't think that we should. But it was, in terms of the work that I do, so Night of the Musicals is a welcome for both Johnny and myself, who some of our works are very political. So Night of the Musicals provides us a moment to exhale, but also just to revel in our friendship and camaraderie. Some of our other works, I've got a work called Black, which is a meditation on depression, and there are other things, like my kid show. But in Tannhäuser, my role was to present, Tannhäuser has two lives, one with Venus, one with Elizabeth, and the one with Venus was hedonistic. Mm. But instead of just going with the goddess, they went with a lifestyle. So it was me, and representing the LGBTQ community, the queer community, the cabaret community, the circus community, and that presented really hard for some people at Bayreuth.
Are you telling me that you sang the role of Venus, or you acted the role of Venus?
Because
that. No, I thought.
I was actually Le Gâteau Chocolat in the opera.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Now that makes more sense.
Yes.
How about that for a small world?
I know.
But Johnny, how did you two meet? It sounds as though it's a friendship that's been going on for a while, now you've got this wonderful show going. How did you?
We met in 2004 because I was doing a party in London called Gay Bingo, which was this riotous, crazy, underground, notorious. I don't know how much detail you need about Gay Bingo.
It was anarchy.
It was fueled anarchy. And we went to, my friend wanted to take it to Brighton. So we went to Brighton and did it in this tiny little bar. And called the Fringe Bar. And Gâteau was kind of, I guess you came on as a guest act or something, didn't you? In this little act called Shanghai Surprise.
Yes.
Where Gâteau and a friend of ours called Mark with a C used to lip sync to Enough is Enough. Dressed in geisha outfits, and Gâteau wasn't allowed to sing.
I know. Funny.
And anyway, that's how we became friends. He was banned from singing.
Why? Was it a political thing?
No, because the other person in the act couldn't deal with me singing. I'm not with that.
It was a drag thing. It was fine. He's still a good friend. We went to his wedding, didn't we? So that's how we met. So we met on the club scene.
So that's,
and we met on the performance scene.
How many years? That's 15 years now.
2004. And I think that same year, we kind of like thought, it was a time when I was part of the underground queer scene, it was a cabaret scene, which was breaking away, which was being radical and alternative. And we didn't have a cabaret scene really much in London. And it was political.
Cabaret space.
And it was alternative.
Yeah.
So we said, what is the most alternative thing to do, and we've decided was to do something really mainstream in an alternative space. So that's when we said, oh, let's pick the cheesiest name we possibly can, and let's do a Night of the Musicals and sing show tunes, which really wasn't what people were doing. It was all about kind of being scratchy and kind of like confrontational and sneering stuff and throwing stuff and stripping off, which is all kind of wonderful. And that's, you know, a lot of our friendship was very much based in performing and shows and kind of doing that kind of thing, but also disco dancing.
So it was almost an immediate get together. I'm not going to say attraction because that puts a different spin on it.
Oh no, it was an immediate attraction because
of course.
I studied law from 2000 to 2003. I met him the year after, and it was an exposition to a world that I didn't know existed. I was like, "What is this?" So for me, it was absolutely an attraction.
Yeah, absolutely. And we went to festivals, and it was all part of the Glastonbury. It was all part of the late night scene, which was crazy. And you know, so we've seen some signs, we've kind of waded through some mud.
Oh, yeah.
The first time we went to Glastonbury, we saw Shirley Bassey. We should have had Shirley Bassey on this list.
Shirley Bassey and Amy Winehouse.
Shirley Bassey and Amy Winehouse, of course. But seeing Shirley Bassey was the main reason why we went, because I would have never gone to Glastonbury, but it was like Shirley Bassey at Glastonbury. It was raining, we trudged through the mud. She was singing The Living Tree.
With a full orchestra.
And we cried.
We cried.
And we did cry.
Yes.
It was, I think it is still one of the best. I've been to Glastonbury like 11 times now, and that moment of seeing Shirley Bassey.
It was with the full orchestra.
Was absolutely fantastic, and she was incredible.
She was incredible.
Yeah.
Right, Johnny, this is your turn to choose.
Oh my
music.
God, but that was a little slip. You said this was your turn, because it is my turn. Now, this is an artist whose voice truly, it's just incredible. The amount of work that she's clearly put into this is nil, and the level of development of the work, which is transcendent and takes, is absolutely fantastic. And this is a song which...
And why is Ghetto laughing?
Because he's absolutely laughing, because this is wonderful trash, and it's a one-hit wonder of a song that is my most played on my computer, on my iTunes. And I used to go to this pub called called the Royal Oak in East London, and we used to go there very early on a Sunday morning because we'd be up. We'd be up with
you
the lark,
slept.
Of course. No, we'd be up with the lark,
they
of course. We'd
slept.
Have had a coffee, maybe.
They
and
slept.
We'd go, and there'd be people bringing all these plants in, and there'd be a gaggle of kind of like men with slightly limper wrists, kind of like enjoying themselves in the corner, cackling wildly. And on the jukebox, you know, it was mid-90s, and we'd either be putting on Robbie Williams, which is awful, but we were so kind of like, jazzed up on caffeine, we thought it'd be a good idea. But my favorite track that we'd put on is this one, and I lip sync to it now often.
Who's the artist, Johnny?
She's called Natalie Imbruglia.
The G is silent. Oh, Imbruglia.
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 Imbruglia. And I do perform it now as a lip synchronized piece of art, with a guitar with no strings, nude, and often a firework will end up where the sun don't shine. And the song is called Torn by Natalie Imbruglia.
I thought I saw a man brought to life. He was warm, he came around like he was dignified. He showed me what it was to cry. Well, you couldn't be that man I adored. You don't seem to know, you seem to care what your heart is for. Well, I don't know him anymore. There's nothing where he used to lie. The conversation has run dry. Something real, wide awake, and I can see the perfect sky is torn.
My inspiration has run dry. That's what's going on. Nothing's right.
Piece called Torn, and it was the choice of one of my guests, Johnny Wu, who with Le Gâteau Chocolat are my two guests on People of Note. Who was performing that, Johnny?
Natalie Imbruglia.
Beautiful.
And I love the way you call it a piece called Torn, like it's a choice piece of classical music, which it is to many. It is to me.
It is to me.
We'll get back to the show that you're doing for Peter Turin, A Night at the Musicals, in a moment, but I was intrigued to hear how you did, in fact, meet to get together to do these shows. I mean, reading through your bios, it seems that you've done so much. And, Johnny, how did you get into this drag and
get
club
into this
business?
Well, by club, well, you get into clubs by going to them, by kind of going to clubs when you're 16 and being kind of fascinated and drawn in and wowed and enjoying it and loving it and the freedom and the music and the expression and the lights and the kind of everything that goes with it and the drugs, you know, that's part of my story.
Because you had a drug problem, didn't you, at one stage?
Yeah, I didn't have an overdose, but I was hospitalized in 2006 with multiple organ failure, which actually links into one of the songs, so we can kind of maybe go back to that.
Okay.
I'll tell you.
Don't forget.
You know, it goes in nicely too. It's quite a nice little story. So yes, as I say, I have my kind of bar in London called The Glory. So I kind of still kind of like do stuff in nightlife. But when I went through the 90s, I did drama at university and I did dance. And then, you know, whilst going out and doing all this kind of stuff, I decided, like, I want to be a dancer. So I took myself to dance school. And when I left dance school, my boss at this comedy club I was working at was like, you got to go to New York. This guy called Noel Faulkner, who's this really lovely guy, and he paid for me for a ticket to go to New York for a weekend. And it wasn't quite a weekend, I didn't come back, but I kind of came back, and then I went back on a more or less one-way ticket and landed up staying for 3 years. And I went there to dance, and I did dance, and I was doing lots of classes. And whilst there, I met friends who were drag queens and strippers. And I discovered this world called the downtown performance art scene, which was rooted very much in the burlesque scene, which was just opening up in the turn of the century. Actually, that's exactly when it was. It was the turn of the century. And it was radical, and it was provocative, and it was political, and it was very kind of like fierce, powerful women doing kind of very courageous kind of work. And a bunch of poofs who were also performing would come and use it as a platform for their stuff too. You know, this was before really kind of queer had become a kind of a word and a thing, and now, you know, queer performance in theatre is like a big thing. Then it was all kind of like a bit mishmash. And so that's where I started doing kind of my kind of performance. And I was going to clubs and parties where performance was, every time you went out, there'd be a show. There'd be kind of like some kind of like crazy strip show, which wasn't just stripping, but it was kind of radical at the same time. There'd be kind of really kind of full on drag. Kiki and Herb were kind of, Justin Vivian Bond was one of my biggest influences in kind of performance and going into cabaret. The first person I met was this incredible performer called Lavinia Co-op, who was part of the radical drag troupe called the Blue Lips. These are all people worth kind of, you know, Googling and looking up, because they're, you know, it's, yeah, they're all extraordinary and kind of like paved the way.
They are a part of our history as
yeah,
well.
And paved the way for so many people. And then I kind of came back to the UK 3 years later. I was like, I can't do another winter in New York. I can't do another, you know, if you've been winter,
It's crazy.
3 months of kind of like deepest, darkest cold. And I brought back my kind of version of shows that I've seen in clubs. And I started throwing my version to those parties. And it became a thing. And in East London, it kind of helped shape the East London gay scene, the queer scene. And it's, you know, it's still happening. So that's kind of, that's how I got into it all.
Johnny, do you have a persona? Or when you do drag, it's drag in that you are...
It's heightened. It's kind of like, I find it very difficult to perform in flats or without a wig. And being, a gentleman of restricted hair growth, even if it's a little short wig. In the show, I do a lot of little short wigs in this one. So it's drag gives me the opportunity to kind of present kind of like ideas in a different way. You know, kind of you can present angry, political, challenging, ugly stuff in sequence. And it becomes accessible.
A vehicle.
Yeah.
You've both of you have said political a few times. Yes. Is this politically to do with the LGBT thing, or is it politics in general?
I think it depends what kind of what muse is floating my boat or what's around at the time. And it's gone everything from, you know, a personal identity to discussing kind of queer stuff to I've been working 3 years on a big show about Brexit. So there you go. That's kind of like... Okay.
And I find that my life, sometimes the sheer virtue of my existence is in itself political. And so I can't escape it. So in my work, I talk about race, I talk about size, I talk about sexuality, I talk about gender, because that is who I am. When you ask Johnny, as a drag character, has become someone else. For both of us, I feel like we are just under a magnifying glass when we put the makeup on. But who we are, who intrinsically we remain, is very much, it's not like Barry Humphreys becoming Dame Edna, where they're completely separate people. I am very much... who Le Gas Chocolat is. I'm just magnified.
Oh, like, well, there's in this country Peter Durkheis, whom I think you mentioned, you know, who has Evita Bazaidenhout.
Yes.
And Brendan Van Rijn, who has Kathy Specific. These are people that they've created their alter egos, so to speak.
And you're talking about, you know, politics with a small or capital P. In Night of the Musicals, which is an entertainment and a lol and a fun fest, we've pivoted with politics. And there are racial politics. And last night, when you kind of stuck your fist up in the air and said Black Lives Matter, I thought that's a powerful thing to be saying on a South African stage.
Yes.
Gosh, that is.
Yeah.
But anyway, we are, as you know, a very politicized country. Well,
absolutely.
Most people are these days.
Yes.
But I want you to, Gatto, be very kind and let Johnny choose the next piece of music, because you mentioned a link.
Oh. That is the link, and we're going for Liza.
To the next time.
Oh, no, I'm ready.
We're going for Liza Minnelli.
Oh.
Liza Minnelli. But this is because when I was in hospital, in Homerton Hospital, in intensive care, because I'd exhausted myself and I'd
and
made myself
in,
very sick.
And you were in an induced coma?
I was in an induced coma, and my good friends got together in this pub called the George and Dragon, where I used to do kind of like work and stuff, and they got together and had like a sort of mini kind of like council, and it's like, how do we protect Johnny whilst he's there? So, you know, kind of like, how do we protect him in this vulnerable state? And they had the password to get in to see me in intensive care, and I'm always meeting people who are like, yeah, I came to see you. I'm like, wow, I didn't know. Even now, 13 years, 14 years later. And the password was Liza Minnelli. And so kind of like, it's kind of weird that Liza Minnelli kind of like landed up being this kind of like this symbol for kind of me kind of getting well in a weird way.
Yeah.
And the song, yes, actually, was my friend Andy Butcher had made me a little tape of music. And Yes was on it.
Well,
that's why I listened to it a lot. So that's damn old Liza. Yes.
Okay.
Are you going to get better, Johnny?
Yes.
That's what this is. It's from Liza with a Z.
Gentlemen, Liza Minnelli.
Yes. Say yes. Keeps happening every day. Say yes. When opportunity comes your way, you can't start wondering what you say. You'll never
never win if you never play. Say yes. There's Mink and Mary go right outside. And long white Cadillacs you can ride. Nothing's gained if there's nothing tried. Say yes. Don't say why. Say why not. What lies beyond what is, is not. So what? Say yes. Yes, I can. Yes, I will. Yes, I'll take a sip. Yes, I'll touch. Yes, of course. Yes, how nice. Yes, I happily. Thank you very much. Yes, oh. There's lots of chaff, but there's lots of wheat. Yes. You might get mugged as you walk the street, but on the other hand, you might greet that handsome stranger you belong to meet. Say yes. Yes, I'll look. Yes, I'll walk. Yes, I'd love to do such and such.
It's an unmistakable voice, isn't it, Liza Minnelli? Isn't it, Johnny?
Oh my God! Of course, it's like
say yes.
It's a good one to impersonate, and it's, you know, as she gets older, it's the voice that keeps on giving. It gives many different things to many different people on QVC sometimes too, which is quite funny.
Okay, my guests on this week's edition of People of Note: Johnny Wu and Legato Shukla, who are performing Night at the Musicals at Peter Tureen's Theatre on the Bay, just opened this week. How long are you here, by the way?
Three weeks.
Yeah. October, oh, you've got a three-week run.
Yeah, great. 5th of October is the last night.
Okay, I'm still going to come back to the show, but it's your turn now, Gato, to tell me. I know we spoke about law and we spoke about opera, but I just want to go further back when you were a young child. Maybe you said you grew up in Nigeria.
Correct. That's correct. So I was born in London. I grew up in Nigeria, and I moved back to England when I was 16. So that's kind of the short version. I don't know if I need any more than that. So I straddle this glorious dual citizenship of being Nigerian and British, but politically speaking as well, the implications of being Nigerian and British, because Nigeria still feels the embers of being colonized, and it's just in the forefront of everything that we are. You know, that's how politically charged we are at the moment. So, and then I moved back when I was 16. I went to a school just outside Brighton called Stenning Grammar School, where I was head boy. Thank you very much. Not just a pretty face. And then I ended up at Sussex University, because Sussex University was just next to this place. And Brighton was a glorious city to explore, where I studied law for 3 years, 2003. And I decided it was not for me at all. And then I spent the next kind of 3-4 years wondering what on earth to do with my life and hoping that I could make some sort of living from singing. And slowly but surely that happened. And touch wood, it will continue happening, because the very idea of having to do anything with my law degree fills me with such bleakness and despair.
Shame.
Yeah.
But so you had a bit of a theatrical streak in you right at the beginning, even although you studied law.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I've always wanted to sing. I grew up in a very Christian country. My dad was Catholic, so I was going to catechism every Saturday for First Holy Communion, and my mum was Pentecostal. And I remember praying for God to give me a voice. I was like, I just want to sing. God, just make me sing.
And look what he's done. He's given you a magnificent bass voice.
So in a way, because I've never expunged my belief, I suppose I have a different interpretation of what religion is now. I suppose there's a part of me that believes in the divine, or maybe me praying for it meant that I worked for it, whatever. It just, having that sort of thought put me onto this path, really.
Okay. And then getting into the drag scene.
Yes.
Was that as a result of meeting Johnny? Well, or had you started before?
Oh, no, I hadn't. When I got to university in 2000, there was a club night in Brighton called Dynamite Boogaloo, and it was every Thursday, and it was where we gathered. It was the best club night. And at 12:30, the DJs were Boogaloo Stew and Dynamite Cell, but Boogaloo Stew was also a cabaret performer and Dolly Rocket, and they would do a show at 12:30. And I was like, what on earth is this? You know, it hadn't been long since I'd moved from Nigeria, so my eyes, a bit like Johnny was saying, all the discoveries he made in clubs, my eyes and my soul and my heart and my mind were like, what is this? And you know, so for something that wasn't on my radar at all, to then plant those seeds there and then, that have now germinated into me being, you know, 2019 years later, being in South Africa. I feel like if we were to retrace, if we were to plot back to the inception of Le Gâteau Chocolat, it would be Dynamite Boogaloo, which was 19 years ago. Gosh, that's ridiculous, 19 years ago.
Yeah. 19 years, you see. We're all getting terribly old.
We are indeed.
Aren't we, Johnny?
I never felt younger.
Johnny's actually turning 47 on the 4th of October. We're still here.
Whilst I'm here.
While we're here.
Oh, good. You're a Libra like me.
I am a Libra.
Let's have a piece of music, and I think it's your turn, Ghetto.
So I'm going to go with Hyper Ballad by Björk, only because that's so left of center, and people wouldn't expect that to be in sort of the music that I enjoy. But I really, really love who she is. I love what she stands for. I think there's something about, she's so Scandic and Icelandic, and her voice is so weird and esoteric, and her arrangements are so interesting. Like, there was a live performance where I saw someone making a sound by shuffling a pack of cards. And so that's how much she and her producers interrogate sound. You know, it's in the weirdest of places. She also did a film called Dancer in the Dark, and it's glorious because they use the sound of machinery, like things opening and closing. And so there's something really inspirational about how she's able to embrace every sound around her as music. And Hyper Ballad is so ethereal. It's so, you just immerse yourself in what Hyper Ballad does. That's why I love it.
There's a choice. Björk, tell me about it, Gerta. You chose it, so tell me what we've just heard.
It's a song called Hyper Ballad, and it's a bit of a soundscape that you just have to immerse yourself in. And the words are actually bleakly about letting go and dying. There's a mortality to it. It's very beautiful.
Okay, well, we're talking to Johnny Wu and Le Gâteau au Chocolat, who are performing together at Peter Tureen's Theatre on the Bay in a production that they have devised called Night at the Musicals. And as you said earlier, Johnny, you make it sound, it's the sort of thing you go for a good evening at the theatre to hear well-known songs.
Oh, absolutely.
It's family can go.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't have too young.
There's nothing.
I wouldn't necessarily bring toddlers.
I wouldn't. Well, no one is going to bring a toddler to an 8 o'clock show.
Okay, but how is it structured then? What do we see when we go there?
You see me, Gâteau au Chocolat, Christine from Phantom of the Opera, and Johnny Wu as the Phantom.
That's what you get. Okay, so we kind of like sing and we play with some of our favourite show tunes and some of the world's favourite show tunes also. We lampoon them, we sing them, we homage them, we deconstruct them, we lip-sync to them, we dance to them, and we chat amongst ourselves and have banter between us. And we invite the audience to be part of our party, of our celebration. We're not the kind of drag that is standoff, don't touch me, kind of new, click your fingers, fierce sleigh drag. That's not us
at all.
We are like, hi, welcome to our party, welcome to our living room. Look at us. Aren't we a couple of...
idiots.
Yes.
and do you do costume changes?
Oh, my God.
Every opportunity. Surreptitious striptease.
Yes. Mostly bathing suits.
Mostly, yeah. There's a lot of body, oddy, oddy on display.
On stage.
Okay. You know, the LGBT thing, as we know, has never been more relevant or strong or appropriate. Is that true in England? Certainly here, after the very, very Calvinistic background we've had in this country, the LGBT thing is now a very powerful movement here.
Yes.
And I presume it's the same in the UK, because there were times when the UK was really quite tricky in that respect, wasn't
it? Absolutely. I think last year was the 50-year anniversary of the decriminalisation of homosexuality.
Yeah, 50 years. No, it's 50 years of Stonewall. Which I don't think is... I think we've got the anniversary of the decriminalisation comes after, I think.
No, I think it was last year.
Is it all the same?
Yeah,
so I have this bar called The Glory in London, and so we have a lot of sort of younger queer people. When I say younger, I'm talking people kind of like 1920, early 20s who come to London or are from London to create their identity, find their identity, kind of link with. So we are kind of constantly at the forefront of that conversation. Yeah. We're talking pronouns, we're talking bathrooms, we're talking trans pride, we're talking about moving forward. We're talking about non-binary, we're talking about the kind of sex positivity.
Yeah.
We're having these conversations that kind of like mum and dad would be like, what? And, you know, London last weekend had the first trans pride, you know, so they're all kind of like posting on social media about that. So LGBTQI+, you know, is a hot topic. And
it is a hot topic, but you know what we look forward to as well? I don't know that in our lifetime we will achieve a level of equilibrium, but it's so important that at this stage it's such a big part of the conversation, so that it just seeps into our collective social psyche and our consciousness, so that it doesn't become an issue. You aren't othered for being part of the LGBTQ. You are embraced. So that a man holding another man's hand doesn't make someone else feel emasculated so much so that they're attacked. And they have the confidence and they can do it without fear. And I think is something seemingly as innocuous as hand-holding is why this conversation is still... So, I mean, in the UK, we're talking about the introduction of this into the school curriculum, so that kids understand that parents and families can be different formations, two dads, two moms. And yeah, so I think we are moving in the right direction, but we've got to be very, very vigilant, because every time you move in one direction, the other side are getting ready to pull it back.
Exactly.
But on the lighter side, this show that we're going to see, this show, Night of the Musicals, is just jolly good fun in the theatre.
It's jolly good fun.
It's jolly good fun. It's jolly good fun with a heart, and it's inclusive. And, have a drink, kind of bring your buddies, bring your drag your boyfriend along.
Les Miserables.
Come on, girls, get together,
get some Chardonnay.
Get some Chardonnay or Chenin Blanc from one of the wineries or something.
And you're also going to sing along.
Are you going to get to sample some of our wines out
yes,
here?
Yes,
you
know, we are.
We've already been doing a little sample.
We love your wines. you make a good wine here.
Yeah, and great calamari.
Thank you, both of you, very much. And it's great to meet you. And I hope you're going to have a great 3 weeks.
Thank you very much indeed.
And go and look at lots of things. Look at the sea a lot, Johnny, because you're like me. I love the sea.
Oh, amazing.
Especially down here, it can be quite wild.
Yeah. Yes.
Although not really now, in winter more. What is the last piece? What are you going to play as the last piece?
A track called Halo
by
the glorious incandescent international global superstar.
That was my number one iTunes song for
a long time,
and it's
by who?
By Beyonce.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much, Johnny Wu and Legateur Chocolat in Night at the Musicals at Peter Tureen's Theatre on the Bay. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Tureen Productions.
Ladies and gentlemen, specialist wealth management company Citadel presents the multi-award-winning review, A Night at the Musicals, direct from London's West End to Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay, from 17 September to 5 October 2019. A Night at the Musicals is a fabulous back catalogue of all the top musicals, hilariously presented by international stars. From Les Mis, The Lion King, Phantom of the Opera and Cats, to Beauty and the Beast, Annie, Grease and many more. Don't miss this beautifully presented musical showcase from 17 September till 5 October at Theatre on the Bay.
Citadel Investment Services Proprietary Limited is licensed as a financial services provider. FMR.